Welcome back to Books, Films, Tilly. This is your host, Tilly, and today I'll be discussing the Super Mario Bros. Movie, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, and Jonathan Livingston sequel by Richard Bach. Okay, first off, I know the scheduling is a bit out of whack at the moment, and I promise I am reconfiguring it and it will get back into its flow. It'll happen, and I'm sorry. Second of all, for those of you who follow Instagram or, you know, have read the title, listen to what I just said, I'm sure you think the lineup for today's episode seems really random, and I've never discussed this many films or books in one episode, but I promise it kind of makes sense, and I just really wanted to discuss these three anyways. I hope everyone had a good weekend, by the way, whether you celebrate Easter or not. I'm now in Portugal. I'm staying with my grandmother now, so it's nice and warm. The sun is out. I can see the sun from where I'm recording right now. I wrote half of this in a cafe by the sea with some nice buttery toast next to me. And today I had a pastel de nata and I got some reyes, which are like very dry biscuits, which are super duper yummy. And You can totally feel jealous because it's worth feeling jealous. It's gorgeous. however, because I am in Portugal and I'm going to be in Portugal for the next couple of months, actually, it does mean that I probably won't be able to do episodes including other people because, frankly, whilst I am pretty good at socializing, it takes a certain thing to do a podcast episode with someone. And I mean, maybe I'll figure out how to do technology properly and I'll be able to do episodes with people who are not here. But for now, I can't really promise anything. I have already planned for some outside opinions, so that will be fun. But in the meantime, we might be limited to two episodes a month for these next couple of months, although I'll be starting a new project hopefully as well. So there'll be other types of content and, you know, something is coming out on May the 4th, so I'll have to do a special episode when that comes out. Anyways, you won't be starving for content, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, let's get on with the show. On the one hand, we have two films which are adaptations of games, although not of the same type of game. We have one which is an adaptation of a video game and one which is an adaptation of a role-playing, not quite board game, but a game that involves a lot of dice. And then a spiritual book / fable written in 1970. So there's a lot of range in today's episode. I watched both of these films last week. That's part of why they're in the podcast. They were both films that I was anticipating for sure. For completely different reasons, though, to be fair, actually. And while Jonathan Livingston Seagull felt quite fitting considering the time of year, let's start with Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves, because this was the film that I was looking forward to the most. Dungeons and Dragons is the game Dungeons and Dragons is a roleplay fantasy game that was officially released in 1974. It's credited with being a great influence on role-playing games, both in real-life games and video games. And recently, it's had quite a resurgence. Personally, I listened to quite a lot of Dungeons & Dragons games in the pandemic. I haven't watched Stranger Things, although I was and, you know, am aware that Dungeons & Dragons is explicitly referenced in it. I don't think that was what initially brought it to me. I think I've read about it in books, and so it was in the back of my mind. And anyways, I did a lot of indoor cycling in the pandemic, and whilst most of the time I'd play music, sometimes I was just doing simple training exercises, and I would get bored even with the music, so I put a podcast on, and I ended up listening to a Dungeons & Dragons podcast, and I can't remember which specific one. I can't find it in my Spotify episodes, but maybe if I find it, I'll put it in the link in the description. I've never played it, even to this day, but I have severely wanted to, and I still do. actually, I just never really had like a friend group big enough for that. And then, you know, they have to actually want to do it with me. Although I know most of my friends wouldn't necessarily be against it. They're a bit everywhere at the moment. Either way, I think I really enjoyed it because you have to be really committed to play a game of Dungeons and Dragons and to create your character. And a lot of people put on accents. Some people have outfits and they've designed their characters online. And it's just, I think I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing other people enjoying themselves and being creative and silly and enthusiastic as well about something. Even if they weren't enthusiastic as characters, they were still enthusiastically carrying out their role, if that makes sense. And also with the benefit of, you know, me listening to it in the form of a podcast, I could really imagine the whole thing taking place, which was really nice. Since March, I think actually February, I've been hyping up Dungeons and Dragons in my mind. Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which came out on March the 31st, I believe, in the UK. And I'd been hyping it up in my mind, and I was really, 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 really hoping it wasn't going to be bad. And it wasn't. I can confirm this definitively with outside sources as well, including my mum doing extra research after the film to tell us more about it and how it was received by critics. And then the after film debrief in the car with my whole family, and the fact that my dad said it was good, even though this isn't really his kind of film. I think already 10 minutes in, my main thought was, I think a lot of people agree. I was thinking, this is what certain superhero movies at the moment think they are. This is what they think they are, and this is what they're supposed to aspire to be like, because this is the model when it comes to the type of humor that they're trying to create. Sometimes I worry that my summaries are not going to make sense, so I put more information than necessary to the point that they don't make sense. We're going to try and avoid that this time. practice makes perfect. So to give a brief summary, it's not very brief, it's a summary. For those of you who haven't watched the film, Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves is a fantasy action heist comedy. The plot centers around Edgin Davis, played by Chris Pine, trying to retrieve a tablet of resurrection to resurrect his dead wife, played by Georgia Landers. His wife died as a consequence of his job as a Harper agent, with the Harper Order being almost like a police force, and it's an order which is kind of dedicated to the balance between nature, civilization, but also dedicated to the fight against evil. When his wife dies as a consequence of his job, he renounces his vows as a Harper, not marriage vows, and then he becomes a thief, and a good one. His crew first consists solely of Holger, played by Michelle Rodriguez, who helps him get out of his alcoholic slump and helps him take care of his baby Kira. And she's kind of what encourages, she's the one who encourages him to become a thief. Then they are joined by Simon Omar, played by Justice Smith. I don't know why I adopted an American accent just then. He is a sorcerer. And then they are joined by Forge Fitzwilliam, who's played by Hugh Grant. They are then, as a crew, commissioned by a woman who goes by the name Sophina, played by Daisy Head, and she was Jenya in Shadow and Bone, so it was really nice to see her. And Edgin doesn't want to say yes to the job straight away, because it would involve breaking into a Harper stronghold, but he agrees because in the stronghold there is the Tablet of Resurrection. During the retrieving of this other magical relic for Sophina, Sophina betrays the crew and entraps Edgin and Holger, condemning them to prison, with Simon and Forge managing to get out. Fast forward 2 years when they managed to escape from prison. Forge was actually working with Sophina and has taken Edgin's daughter Kira. And so now Edgin not only has to retrieve the relic from yet another high security fortress where Forge is, he now also has to retrieve his own daughter. And so Holger and Edgin track down Simon Omar, the sorcerer, so that he can rejoin his team and help them in this heist. And then the team is also joined by Doric, a tiefling druid whose motives are taking down the new regime set up by Sofina and Forge, which has provoked mass deforestation and threatens her people and their well-being. They're also aided by Reggie Jean Page's character, Zenk Yendar, a good doer paladin who's noticeably moral and noble. The film also opens up the possibility for sequels and for a larger battle against the forces of evil. There you go. You have a general idea. First impressions. When I watched the trailer and I saw a couple of the clips from the film, I was a little worried, to be honest, because whilst the clips that we were given were very amusing, I was a little worried that it was going to end up being quite cringeworthy when I watched it on screen. And actually, it was all right. They modified some of the, you know, obviously the clips are slightly different from what it looks like in the film, so they're not that bad. I do, however, think that maybe the trailer revealed a bit too much. I think they may have revealed too many of the comedy moments, and they were really good as well, so I didn't really need to know all of them to be convinced to watch it. But it didn't really take away from the whole experience, so it's okay. It's a really fun film, actually, but it's not trying to be smart-ass. You know, it doesn't make fun of itself. None of the humour felt like it discredited the characters either. I think the type of humour used by each character was actually very well delegated and very suiting to the character that they were trying to present. For example, Hugh Grant's character, Forge, very, very well executed. Even though, okay, he is kind of playing his character that he played in Paddington 2, but I didn't mind at all. I love Paddington 2. Another good example of balance is with Zenk, Reggie Jean Page's character. He's not consistently there, which means that the jokes surrounding him and his character, because a lot of the time they're making fun of the fact that he doesn't really understand irony. He isn't very sarcastic. He's very noble. He's very moral. And that's like fundamentally him as a character. So the fact that he isn't there means that the jokes surrounding him aren't repetitive. I think they also chose their moments of humor very well too, so that they didn't corrupt the tension or the significance of more important scenes. The humor is very dry, very sarcastic, without it being overwhelming. I was actually, okay, not to be mean, but I was actually a little surprised by the fact that the writers were all American, in the sense that there were some very British little quips. I could spend days talking about British humor and how it's different from American humor, but yeah, anyways, very good job. Really liked it. I think they did well to set up the fantasy part at the beginning. I think they did well to introduce the characters. I think the fact that they created this scenario in which it was plausible for Edgin to give his backstory, I thought that was really clever. And I think it introduced well the context of the world. You have the long shots that you see in fantasy as well, which was really good. The music, it remained instrumental besides Chris Pine's bard moments until the end, which was, you know, no repeats of The School for Good and Evil. It's quite long, but I didn't actually feel like it dragged. I think it depends on whether or not you've actually listened to Dungeons and Dragons, not listened, but you know, if you've ever played Dungeons and Dragons or if you're aware of Dungeons and Dragons as the game, because it does involve a lot of detours. Yeah, as a game. The thing is that I think that they use those detours well as well. That's another reason why I didn't have a problem with it, because they used it to conduct a lot of actually really good characterizations. The presence of such a strong characterization was very fitting as well. It gave everyone motives and it also strengthened their role as part of this adventure. A lot of the times in action movies, they're just like, yeah, money. And then the people are like, yeah, I'm in. Or they call up someone like, Jim, are you down for this mission? And the person's like, for you, Kevin, of course. And it's stupid. And like, why? Okay. And they didn't do that here. They explained it, which I thought was great. Not that money isn't the motivation for some people, but it's more explicitly explained. For example, like Doric, we're introduced to her through her protecting her people, which is why she joins the heist. It's because she wants to bring down Forge and Sofina's regime. It's great. It works. It's very well done. And it's actually what people do in a D&D, the beginning of a D&D campaign. If they've got a new character, they will introduce themselves. They will explain their characters. It worked really well. I loved it. And there and like other stuff, like even just the fact that Simon can only work well under pressure. It's very much like in real life, when you can never roll the dice correctly to be able to do the spell that you're supposed to do, but then you're able to do it at the right moment, that kind of thing. I think it worked really well. They did it very D&D. And a lot of people spoke about how well each character actually demonstrated caricatures you'll find in a D&D party, as in you'll have the person who's very reluctant, you'll have the noble righteous one played by Zenk, you'll have the person who's kind of the charismatic leader of the group, you'll have the gruff one who's here is Holger. There were some jump scares as well. Like, there were a couple of times when... And I know it was a 12A rating in the UK and PG-13 elsewhere, but OMG. I was jumping left, right, and center, but it was good, you know? Like, it created tension. I don't know how to explain it. It just... I feel like this film had the perfect amount of everything. I don't love what Adventure Heist movies have been doing recently, especially in this low age range, but this truly works. It didn't feel predictable at all either. I'm sure you could have guessed certain events, but it was like never blatantly obvious. The CGI was well used. I love the sheer quantity of interesting elements that took place or were introduced. They didn't just introduce those elements without it making sense. It didn't feel like they were simply thrown in. And I loved the casting. Sophia Lillis as Doric was amazing. She just looked like a fantasy character. She looked perfect. It's charming, it's entertaining, and it was well received by the D&D community. It's such a fun fantasy action film in a way that we haven't seen so much recently, and I would fully recommend if you're kind of losing faith in that genre. So for those of you who are still hesitant because you don't believe that this specific style of film can even be decent anymore and just don't trust in the tomato meter ratings or even IMDb, I promise this film will at least partially restore your faith. Now, onto the Super Mario Bros. Movie. I've never felt as much joy on my birthday. That's not true. I've had some amazing birthdays. But top five best moments of my birthdays of all time was me getting a DS. Hands down. For those of you who do not know, the plot of most Mario games revolves around Bowser fighting Mario and Luigi, aka the Mario Bros., usually because he's trying to or has kidnapped Peach. That's the plot of the new Super Mario Bros. Game, the game I played when I was younger. This film follows the same train of thought, except it starts with Mario and Luigi being in Brooklyn, which is where they come from. They've just started up their new plumbing business, and something big goes wrong in Brooklyn. There's this massive flooding going on. And they go to see if they can help out. And in the process, they end up getting sucked into this pipe that takes them to the world where Bowser, Peach, Toad, all of them, the Mario Bros. World, basically. And in this world, Bowser is slowly taking over the other kingdoms in his pursuit to take over this whole world. And he wants to get married with Peach because he is apparently in love with her. So he's moving towards the Toad Kingdom to go and propose to Peach or kidnap her and force her to marry him. The thing is that, like, the plot was thin. It was very much like watching your favorite video game being put on screen and animated with voice actors and without you being involved in any way with the plot. There were some moments, like, for example, when Mario and Peach meet each other, it's she almost instantly agrees for him to join her group with like an interlude. But it's just incredible how quickly she trusts him. I had to lean over my little brother to give my sister the eye. But this world felt like the Mario world, you know, like it had all of the lovely colors. It had, I think a lot of the designs were very on point. There were many, many, many Easter eggs and references. I loved seeing Peach on the motorbike when there was kind of like a Mario Kart scene. She was in the motorbike outfit. I would always play Peach in the motorbike outfit when I used to play on the Wii. I loved the emphasis on certain elements of the Super Mario Bros. World, like the Koopas, their use of Rainbow Road and the different power-ups, and how I think they really understood and implemented how they're used and their significance and kind of their meaning to us as players when we see them too in game, such as like the blue shell. I'm also glad that Peach had agency and a significant role in the plot. She was really badass and we like to see it. I think they could have kept her a bit more girly, but I'm happy with the way she came out, and I loved having Anya Taylor-Joy play her. Yeah, her outfits looked fantastic. I loved the design, loved the way that they put it in screen, and she was overall my favorite character. It was enjoyable. Like, I'm not saying that it wasn't enjoyable, despite the plot. The fact the plot was really, it was thin, guys. Jack Black as Bowser and his Peach song stole the show. I didn't like Chris Pratt's voice acting at all, actually. And this is, again, not an original thought, but I have no idea what he was going on with that accent. I have no idea where the hell I was supposed to think he came from scene to scene. But everyone else did well. I didn't really have any problem with anyone else. And I did find it funny at points. I just wasn't, like, overwhelmed. As in, it's an average film. And to be honest, it was kind of tiring to watch in a way that other Illumination films weren't and haven't been so much. But either way, I did think that the animation style was very pretty. It's decent. My little brother enjoyed it. We went for his birthday. And at the end of the day, when it comes to these specific films in which it is an adaptation, the point is that the target audience enjoys it. And my brother is the target audience, 100%. It was never going to be The Last of Us as a video game adaptation because they're very different types of games as well, and obviously different age groups. I think it just needed to cater to its video game playing audience well enough that it didn't get in trouble, and it did. It did well. I think if you like Mario, you'll enjoy this, but if you don't, you're not going to be impressed. I don't think it's worth you watching it particularly. Audience reviews on Tomatometer have it at 96% in the ratings. It broke the record for opening weekends in both animated films and video game adaptations at £304 million. But it was Easter, so it was the holidays. And the Mario Brothers are the most famous video game characters of all time. What's interesting, and part of the reason why I think it's good that I watched both films, literally, I watched both of them one after the other, but I'm glad that I can discuss them at the same time because they're both fresh in my mind. What's interesting is that both these films have very high audience reviews. The Mario movie currently is sitting at 96% on the Tomatometer audience ratings. I say currently because it only came out on the 5th, a whole week after Dungeons & Dragons came out. And things are still early days. Dungeons & Dragons is sitting at 94%. However, Dungeons & Dragons is comfortably sitting at 90% of critics' ratings. So it is approved both as a separate piece of work and as an adaptation of a well-loved game, in which there is a lot of lore as well. Mario Bros. Is sitting at 56% for critics' ratings. So D&D basically had minimal expectations and delivered much, much more, where Mario had many expectations. And whilst Mario was filled with references, it was kind of empty. I don't think it brought anything to video game adaptations besides proving what I think has already been proved, especially with, I mean, there are other examples, but everyone knows how well The Last of Us has done. And that's a great example of where sticking to the video game does work. And here it did stick to the video game, but we already knew that that was something that worked. But yeah, I'm sorry. It didn't have any meaning to it. Like, I love my siblings to bits, but simply repeating, "We can do anything if we do it together," between Luigi and Mario, is not a moral. And that seemed to be the only kind of message that I was receiving. It was cute, but like, there are plenty of Disney films that have made me sob over the moral they present at my big age. And there are other animated films that I have genuinely audibly laughed throughout, like Trek. Just try and do one. That's what we're expecting from a children's animated movie. Make me cry or make me laugh or do both. I expect one or the other. And admittedly, this is Nintendo. They were heavily involved too, so I get that they couldn't really deviate from the character, or they couldn't introduce too much new material potentially, but I think they really needed to add a bit more oomph to it than they did. People watched this film because of Mario, but it would be nice if the film could have encouraged maybe audiences that haven't to actually go play the video game, you know? Now, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, The Odd One Out, the only book in today's lineup. I was thinking last week, okay, what would I recommend now that spring is underway? I'm starting new things. We're all starting new things. People have exams coming up. Some people are graduating. I have a couple of friends who are starting new things as well. And I was thinking, what book would I recommend for someone who's in a similar situation, or who's healing, or who is starting anew? And well, this is what I came up with. So this is a book that I think has been a victim of its own success, but which I feel is very deserving of it nonetheless. It was first published in 1970 and was written by Richard Bach. The first edition was composed of three parts. I think the best way to describe it would be to call it a fable. If you enjoy The Alchemist, but maybe wanted something different or shorter, this is an interesting alternative. I did look up the name Jonathan Livingston to cite Wikipedia. John H. Livingston was alive between 1897 and 1974, and he was an American aviator and air race pilot of the 1920s and 1930s. He placed first in 80 national air races, and so this name was chosen specifically for a reason. And actually, I know this only because I was speaking about it with my grandma. The title is different in Portuguese, and it refers to a Portuguese explorer. So, like, not a character, but another person in history who could be connected to this book because of their achievements or because of what they've done. I actually had this book at home because, not last Christmas, but the Christmas before, I asked people to gift me books that they really enjoyed. And my uncle actually recommended this one to me. I didn't read it at the time. I actually read it last summer. I think at that point I'd finished my exams. I'd gotten my results, and we'd already moved house. So I was fully starting a completely new life. To begin with, the tale is very generally about being non-constrained by the status quo, to essentially have the strength to move into yourself and to pursue what you want out of your existence. It demands that you push yourself towards what you perceive as being an ideal version of yourself, that you embrace it. It asks that you accept the help of others to achieve this goal, and that you help others in return. It's also about love at its core, and about how we should continue to love people even when they don't understand. That's not me promoting any abusive or toxic cycles. It's better explained in the book. It's a book that also quite kindly says it's never too late to break a cycle or do what you want and aspire to do. Through the concept of reincarnation as well, not entirely but in part, and you wouldn't think that it was asking you to break a cycle if I just told you that this book evokes the idea of reincarnation, which is why it's so clever. This is obviously a very, very condensed summary of the ideas in this book. It's written very beautifully and lyrically without seeming too pretentious. There's quite a few philosophy references too. In fact, after I finished school last year, this was what made me want to actually read philosophy outside of school. Yeah, I read most of this by the beach with seagulls as well, which is fantastic. I think I have photos of those few days where I was reading it at the beach as well. It's a fantastic little book, and it was nice reading it by the sea. More literally, it's the tale of three generations of seagulls and then an additional generation in the added part. And essentially, it revolves around the fact that the seagull, Jonathan, begins to aspire for more in his life than just flying out to sea to eat and then coming back and squabbling over food and just being caught up in this repetitive act of doing things to survive. And he aspires to do more than that through a love of flight. And so he practices and practices and manages to become an incredibly talented flyer, capable of flying incredibly quickly and skillfully. But during this process, he becomes banished by the flock that is distrustful of his mindset and his way of life and his pleasure as well at living. And in his old age, during a flight, he is joined by two other seagulls and taken to this new world where he meets others like him. He is taught new, seemingly impossible tricks and skills by the elder of this flock of different seagulls called Chang and by his other mentor, Sullivan. And later he goes back and teaches seagulls in the normal world and a new cycle begins. The final edition actually composes of four parts and it was added in 2014, so much, much, much later. And I think reading the, not epilogue, but his little author's note at the end is very, very interesting and kind of puts his reasoning in context. Richard Bach basically says that he felt it was redundant at the time because he felt that all that he wanted to say and the whole moral of the story had already been said in those first three parts. And so for him, the story was over. But when it was later rediscovered by his partner, he found it much more pertinent first now and decided that he wanted it to be published with the other parts. This last part highlights the dangers of organized religion without necessarily being a critique of religion either. You can see why I chose not to do this directly on Easter, not because I think it's anti-religion, but just because I was worried it would come off as a bit too much or potentially critical on such a day. But I think it's a book that encourages you to have faith in whatever allows you to move into a better version of yourself. And I think that's what's wonderful. It's a brilliant little book. To be honest, it felt kind of peaceful to finish it, if that's even possible. And even though part four is a bit of a warning, the ending is hopeful and quite relieving, actually. And a lot of the negative Goodreads comments criticize it for being what it is. If that makes sense. I think they wanted more from it. I think they expected more from it. But what it is a little spiritual tale written in fancy language, literally written about seagulls, with lots of seagulls pictures in it. And I quite like the seagulls pictures. It was a good way to break up the book. But like, that's what it is. But yeah, like, it will also tell you to go do things and have faith in whatever you have faith in. Also to practice that faith and that. And it tells you that things take time and it introduces ideas of the meaning of perfection and what perfection looks like. It talks about reincarnation, the concept of gods in both the philosophical sense and through the lens of the gods that we see in our religions today. And there are many, many interesting philosophical points that are somewhat presented here. I could easily do a 10 like more than 10 page essay connecting all the different philosophical arguments with their quotes and like linking them with quotes in this book. But I don't have my feudal books with me right now, so maybe I will in the future. It would take a while, but it would be really interesting as well. Either way, if you've never ever read a book by a philosopher and if you don't like self-help, I will always say this is the one book worth reading in both of those genres. And I think my uncle and I very much agree on that. And I'm glad that this is the one book that he felt I should read because I think it's so worth it. So this is my spring book recommendation because I think it really is very interesting. It's a very interesting little book. Even if you don't agree with every idea presented, like I think it's worth reading even if you don't, even if you don't enjoy it, you know? On a completely separate note, when I talk about a film or a book at the end of a podcast episode, I'm always worried that it comes off as if I've literally just watched one other film or one other book in my week, and that is not true. But I just talk about whatever was the most interesting thing that I consumed media-wise this week. And I, just before reading this episode, recording this episode, I watched Blade Runner 2049. Now, oh my gosh, it was so good. It was so good. It's so good. Like, it's so beautiful. And I've literally been annoying my friends so much these last few days, and even before the Barbie trailer came out, because I keep saying, I swear Ryan Gosling is underrated. Like, I know he's an A-list actor, but he feels underrated in my mind because I literally love him as an actor, and it's such a pretty movie. Like, I know that it's all across and people do loads of edits on the whole thing, but it deserves it. It deserves every amount of praise. Like, it's fantastic. I felt so relaxed. And what was interesting as well is that it made me appreciate the beauty and stillness. Does that make sense? You know, that's what that Mario movie could have really done with. It could have really done with a little slowdown. But yeah, I just thought it was amazing. So yeah, I was glad I finally watched it. Anyways, there won't be an episode this Sunday because I would like to get things together and actually do a good episode for you guys instead of just rushing when I'm already a bit out of sync when it comes to my timings and stuff. I'm sorry, I hate it, but we will get back on track. So there won't be an episode on Sunday, but next episode, American Psycho, going to be really, really interesting. I hope you had a good weekend, whether you're religious or not. And I hope you're enjoying the sun if you've got sun. I've got sun. I know there was sun in some places in England. I hope there was in France as well. And yeah, the day this comes out, I'm going to go get my memory card for my camera, which is going to be great. So I can actually take some proper videos. I hope you have a nice day, and I hope you enjoyed. And go read Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And if you're like, oh, that's too deep for me, go watch Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves. And be happy. And look forward to the future. And know that good things are coming. And everything's going to be good. And everything's going to be okay. Bye.